Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back in hour number three. Sports 56 Mornings on this Thursday, June the 4th. Currently 70 degrees here in Memphis with some sunshine. Going to see a lot of sun today. Some clouds as well with a high around 87 expected, and much of the same tomorrow with more sun mixed with some clouds with a high of around 87, 88. Then it looks like rain could be coming in on Saturday and Sunday for the weekend. But let's keep our fingers crossed and hope we can get some nice weather for the weekend and no rain. We are live here in the Family Leisure Studios, where family and fun come together. That is Family Leisure at 2120 Witten Road. If you want to join the program, you're welcome to do so on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 901-360-8255, 901-360-8255, the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line. If you missed it last night, it was the Knicks going into San Antonio and taking care of the Spurs, 105-95 in game one of the NBA Finals, as Jalen Brunson scored 30 points, was just 12 of 31 from the field, but he was awesome in the fourth quarter. 13 points in the quarter, 5 of 9 from the field. Some massive shots late in that game to put it away. He had 19 of his 30 in the second half. OG Anunoby was also great in the fourth with 12 points in the quarter of his 17. Karl Anthony Towns, 18 points, 12 rebounds, and a fantastic job defensively against Wembanyama. Victor Wembanyama, 26 points, but just 6 of 21 from the field, including 2 for 9 from 3, 12 rebounds, and 6 turnovers. And then you had Stephon Castle with 17 points, 8 rebounds. Dylan Harper, the rookie off the bench, 16 points and 8 rebounds. It was just a disaster of a second half for the Spurs. They only scored 40 points in the half. They shot 31% and 2 of 19 from three-point range. In the fourth quarter, 5 turnovers. They just really struggled offensively in the second half. Do you think, Jay, that second half, the struggles for the Spurs, could that have been a little bit of fatigue catching up?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, the moment, too. Yeah. Big moment. I mean, I'm not going to say the lights were too bright, but although they were bright, and it was a couple things that just, you know, like I remember one play, they had a couple easy buckets and they missed bunnies on the same position. Mm-hmm. Steph Castle got a rebound, missed the bunny. I'm like, it's a little bit of fatigue, a little bit of mental, and a little bit of this is game one of a new stage.
It's, you know, the funny thing, I was thinking about this too. So Jalen Brunson, who we talk about as the little, you know, the little guard, all this stuff. And then you got Victor Wembanyama, the 7'5" monster. They both went 2 of 9 from 3-point range.
Yes. Yes.
Could you imagine telling somebody 25, 30 years ago, so in the NBA Finals, there's going to be a 6-foot dude who goes 2 for 9 from three. There's also going to be a 7'5" dude who goes 2 of 9 from three.
And they're going to shoot combined like 70 total threes for the game or whatever.
It's just, again, we talk about that 1999 finals when nobody made any three.
Like, life was so much simpler.
They did not attempt any threes. Here we've got a 7'5" dude attempting 9 threes in a game. So, again, the Spurs down 0-1. They're at home. So, certainly, game two becomes a must win for the Spurs. Do you believe with the win last night in game one that the Knicks are now the favorite in the series?
I think, well, yeah, I do. Only, and you know what? This may change game to game, Eli.
Yeah.
Because just like as we said with the West Final, each game just had a different plot going in and coming out of it. You saw the adjustments. Right now, yeah, I think we got to look at it. They stole home court. And they stole the momentum in the early part of the series. So I think that would have to switch the favorite, you know, over to them at this point.
They are, if you look at, I just pulled up on FanDuel. They are -134 now. Okay. Spurs are +114.
Which it was almost kind of almost close to even starting out for the most part, odds wise, right?
No, the Spurs were -190
okay.
going into the last night's game. So now the most common odds-wise, or the most, would be the Knicks in six. at plus 310. The Spurs in seven is plus 320. So the odds right now would tell you it's either going to be Knicks in six or Spurs in seven.
And yesterday you asked how many did I think which East side would win at home, and I'm like, each one will win at least one on the road, rather.
Yeah.
I think somebody might get two.
Really?
I think so. It's set up almost for if you're going to win it, you're probably going to need to get two.
See, that's – I look at it – like I think – even after last night, because I thought the Knicks probably would win one of these two games. I thought it would be game two.
Right.
But I also think that the Spurs will probably win either game three or four in New York.
Right.
I think we're probably going to be 2-2 after four games.
Right.
I still think that. Like, that's what I thought going in. That last night does not change that for me. I believe we will be 2-2 after four games.
And it may not happen, but it can definitely be a scenario where the winner may need to win two.
And I guess by my original prediction, because I took Spurs in six, I did have the Spurs winning two games in New York. Because I did think they would lose one of the two at home, then go to New York.
It's
where we would be 2-2. They would go home, win game five, and then they would go close it out in game six in New York.
And it's still reasonably, of course, can happen as well.
Yes.
You know, it's just one of those where it's going to be fun, because I told John and the guys this yesterday. It's like we almost really have to wait to tip off. It's just like let the film work come out for us to be the, you know, for us to assess it, because what we see in game one, they're going to make solid adjustments to a game two. Might not be the complete same story.
See, and I wonder too, like, because we saw, obviously they just got done defending SGA, different player, but so Jalen Brunson, you held him to 12 for 31.
Mm.
But he was awesome when it mattered, and he still scored 30. So if you're Mitch Johnson, like, how do you assess the job you did defensively against him, and how much do you think you may need to adjust or not adjust? Because you're like, well, you got 30, but it took 31 shots to get that. We can live with that, but we've got to do something different in the fourth quarter.
And I reminded the guys this on the happy hour yesterday. You also have to make Jalen Brunson work on defense. He was 1 of 14 as the primary defender last night, so he did a great job.
Yeah.
But a large part of that is De'Aaron Fox being 2 for 13.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like he was able to not get overworked on the defensive end, because he's not seeing shots that's going down where he was the primary guy guarding. And then he's still able to maintain his cool and still attack and handle his business the way he does in closing time.
It's funny, and this is, I guess, this is why I don't really believe a whole lot in the plus-minus stat. Like, De'Aaron Fox was a dead even in plus-minus.
Yeah, because he was on the floor when they were, mostly in the positive.
Every other
I was looking
Spur,
at that earlier, too.
Every other Spur was a minus except for Keldon Johnson, who only played 8 minutes and 20 seconds, who was a plus-one.
Because, like what I was saying about Champagne, I'm like, he looked like the only one that had played in NBA Finals before. But I looked at the plus minus, he's all negative.
Yeah, he's minus 8. Like, and so, like, that's, I don't try. Like, I looked at De'Aaron. I just De'Aaron Fox was awful. And, like, he was, like, the weak point spot of the entire team. And in the end, like, he's an even in the plus minus. The Keldon Johnson thing, too. Like,
same thing, yep.
It's, you know, like, for, again, when you're playing 8 minutes, it's hard to determine anything out of that. Carter Bryant was the one, when he came in, he struggled. Like, that looked like, you talk about somebody
lights
who
bright.
Looked like the lights were too bright.
Lights bright.
He looked like, oh my, I'm not ready for this.
Yeah.
Again, that's what you're supposed to look like as a rookie.
This is true.
Dylan Harper, that does not apply
Dylan
to.
Dylan Harper, he broke the code on that. Being a 20-year-old and looking like he's a 9-year veteran.
But it's, and then you talk about like Landry Shamet. Again, 3 for 6 from three. The dude just keeps making threes. He won't quit making threes. But impressive performance by the Knicks. Impressive performance.
That plus minus, I was looking at it on the basketball reference page, and I went to the breakdown of the quarter, not just the quarters and everything, but the plus minus breakdown, and it does that by quarter. That's what I was looking at. I'm like, Champagne was negative all night as far as that on that stretch. But I saw the same thing that you saw, that Fox was – pretty much spreading out him like he was on the floor a lot during the positive. But he wasn't contributing much to the positive.
Like, a lot of that could just be, as long as you miss, like, if the other team makes, like, that one big run in the game, if you just happen to miss that run, your number's going to look a lot better.
Exactly.
And it's just those guys who are on that when that one 10-0 run or 12-2 run happens, like, That's hard to overcome that in your plus
and
minus.
And what people have to remember that that plus minus is an estimate. It's not a definitive number. It makes sense, but it's not like all definitive.
I don't think it's much.
I don't care about it, quite frankly.
I think it is a completely deceiving thing. I wouldn't even put it in the box score, but they like putting it in the box score.
I can make sense of it, like in certain spots, but there's others that I can't. And because it's that way, I just kind of leave it where it is.
I mean, OG Anunoby was a minus six last night.
Exactly.
And now in the fourth quarter, he was a plus five, but he was minus six for the game. He Shamit and Mitchell Robinson were the only negative plus minus guys for the Knicks last night. But nonetheless, they get the win. Game two coming up tomorrow night. And we'll see if the Spurs do indeed bounce back and get the win. Tonight, it will be game two in the Stanley Cup Finals with Las Vegas. They won on the road in game one of the Stanley Cup, just like the Knicks did in game one of the NBA. We'll see if Carolina can bounce back and win game two in that one. Yesterday, of course, we had the hearing on Capitol Hill about the Protect College Sports Act with various folks testifying. We'll talk much more about this with Brandon Marcello coming up in about 10 minutes or so. I did find it interesting. Pete Bavakwa, the AD at Notre Dame, one of the things they were talking about the pooling of the media rights, which again is one of the things that is in this bill that is, it is a voluntary thing, but as long as 75% of the schools want to do it, they could do it. But they asked him about that. And again, if the 75%, if you take the SEC and the Big Ten, who absolutely don't want to do this, and they make up just under 25%, basically. They need Notre Dame. If Notre Dame was on the side of the SEC and the Big Ten, then the rest of the schools do not make up 75%. They come up a half short. Because 103.5 is 75% of the 138. And if you take the Notre Dame with the Big Ten and the SEC, that leaves 103 other schools. But they asked Pete Bavakwa about it. Because the thought is, again, we know why the Big Ten and the SEC don't want to do it, because they make way more money than everybody else. Why would they let everybody else at their level, bring everybody else to their level? And obviously Notre Dame has a massive contract from NBC. Why would they care about sharing that with other people and everything else? But Pete Bavakwa was asked about it. He said, if you want to maximize media value around college football, I think you would take 24 to 30 teams, create unbelievably competitive scheduling where a team like Notre Dame would play Alabama, Georgia, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and start to get a number that more closely resembles the NFL number when talking about these, the television numbers that they get. So it's funny that here he is asked about the pooling of media rights. And basically he brings up like, well, yeah, but if you want to do that and you want to really maximize it, you need to create the Super League, which is what everybody, no. That's not what we want. We don't want that. That's crazy. No, don't do that. So it's interesting. Yes, he is right. If you wanted to just say, how do we get the most money out of TV? Yes, if you only took those teams and you created a 20, or say, like the NFL, if you took 32 teams, if you took the top 32 programs in college football and said, we're only going to play each other? Yeah, I couldn't, the amount of television money you could get for that would be ridiculous. And if you're only splitting it, say, 32 ways, that could be some unbelievable money for that. That would be absolutely crazy. Got a texter, talked earlier in the show about the Ed Scott comments from yesterday about the revenue sharing. Texter says, Tiger basketball is on a different fiscal year than football. That's why the discrepancy. Football ends at the calendar year, not the fiscal year. Football will get more. He said better than 10 when its fiscal calendar comes up after this season. Plus, as you said, NIL is more than BB. Well, again, he didn't. The fiscal year starts July 1st. So they're both in the same fiscal year. And they're going to be at the full revenue sharing for next fiscal year. So the fiscal year that starts July 1st, that's when they're going. This past year, they weren't at the full level. This next year, they will be at the full level. And amongst that, they will have $9 million for basketball and $7 million for football, is what he said. He wasn't saying that football had $7 million last year. He's saying that football has $7 million for this coming fiscal year out of the $21.3 million, $7 for football, $9 for basketball, and obviously the rest that would be split amongst all of the other sports. And he hoped that football would get to 10 the next year. I believe I've got that correct. I think I understood that.
I read it too.
They weren't at $7 million last year. And yeah. Like basketball was at 4.99. I don't know what football was last year. I don't know if he said that. But he was referring to everything, from my understanding of it, was he was referring, everything was this coming fiscal year, this is where we will be. Again, NIL, yes, is on top of that. And maybe there's some unbelievable amount of millions of dollars that NIL of NIL that's going to football. But I get this formula just doesn't make sense to me. I don't get giving more money to basketball than football. From a number standpoint, from an important standpoint of what it gets you, having the better football program versus a better basketball program, from the return on investment that you've got so far, I don't understand how basketball would be higher than football. That is a formula that doesn't make sense to me. Regardless of what the NIL portion of it is.
Right.
Just, again, most of these schools out there are giving like 65 to 70% at least, and maybe more, of their revenue share to football. I mean, the Tigers, literally, that's 33% to football. That's half of what a lot of these other schools are doing because of the importance of football and the numbers of football. And for a school that's wanting to get into a power conference, we know what will get you there. It's not a great basketball program. And again, just the $9 million on basketball, that doesn't make you a great basketball program. It might make you a great program in the American,
yeah,
but nationally, that doesn't make you a great basketball program.
It makes you a mid-major program.
Augie Collins was on the, like he talked about, if you want to compete at the top 20 level, you better be in the $14 to $15 million range. That's just for top 20.
Right.
So I don't know. Again, certainly they know what they're doing, I think. I just don't understand this doesn't make sense to me why you would divide it up this way. That's we'll see how it all works out. But that I would, if I was the AD of a group of six school, there is no way in hell. I don't care what the tradition tells you. I don't care what anything tells you. There is no way in hell I would be giving more revenue share money toward my basketball program than my football program. There's just no way you could get me to do it that way. All right. Before we take the break, and we got Brandon Marcello coming up on the other side of the break. If you're thinking about breakfast, you should be thinking Sunrise. Thinking about lunch, you can also think about Sunrise. We talked so much about the breakfast, and it is absolutely fantastic. I love the kitchen sink, which is just a little bit of everything, basically, on a plate over there. Although I don't do grits, but so I substitute. See, I get extra hash browns instead of the grits. Great move. But, hey, I know a lot of people around here like the grits, and their grits might be amazing. I don't know. I just don't do grits. So I get extra hash browns in place of the grits, and they do that without a problem. But you can also talk about the biscuit sandwiches, the breakfast bowls, all kinds of great stuff. But there's also a great lunch menu as well. Great sandwiches and salads, all kinds of great stuff on that lunch menu. They're open from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. daily over at Sunrise. You can go to sunrise901.com. right there on the website. You can check out the menu. You can order online. You can get information about catering. Get all that information you need right there on the website, sunrise901.com. And again, if you order online, it makes it very easy. When you get there, you pop in the side door. You can grab your food and go on your way. 670 Jefferson Avenue. That's the original location downtown. And then you've got Sunrise East on Poplar Avenue at 5469 Poplar in East Memphis. Two locations. Great breakfast, great lunch at Sunrise. Brandon Marcello next here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 mornings.
Morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, 9:27 the time. Brandon Marcello going to join us here in just a moment to talk some college football. Greg will be making his return to the program tomorrow after his 6 months sabbatical. No, it's been less than that. But he will be back on the program tomorrow. Of course, on tomorrow's program, John Varlas, as always, Joe DeLeon. We'll also talk a little Belmont with Ed DeRosa. And we'll have 10 in a row for you. That'll all be coming up on tomorrow's program here on Sports 56 Mornings. Another texter about the Memphis thing says FedEx is heavily weighted to football. Well, that FedEx money, if I'm not mistaken, I believe is now all part of the revenue sharing money. I might be wrong on that too. So I don't think that's making up. I don't think that's suddenly like $5 more million towards football. I reserve the right to be wrong, and maybe there is a bunch more money going to football. I don't believe that to be the case where it would make sense with the way they're doing it as far as the revenue share portion of things. Brandon Marcello is the senior national college football reporter for CBS Sports. He's fantastic, does a fantastic job. Always enjoy having him on the program. He was down at the SEC meetings last week. He's been talking to folks over at the Big 12 and everything else. He has his finger on the pulse of what's happening in the world of college football. You can follow him on Twitter at @BMarcello, and he joins us now on the program. Hey, Brandon, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. The world of college athletics continues to just kind of be in flux at this point, I guess. You were down there at the SEC meetings. One of the things you wrote about, because if we go back to last year, of course, the college football playoff selection was a big deal, and the SEC had this new metrics, and they want this stuff considered and all this. And then you wrote about the meeting they had this year with the college football playoff officials that went, I think it was 2 hours and 30 minutes. The SEC just still really not happy, right, with the committee and how they're choosing teams?
No, and I'm not sure that they'll ever be. I mean, it just seems like every year you go down there and they want hard answers as to why they do things the way they do them. And I mean, the fact of the matter is, let's just put it simply, you got humans involved in the selection process. And you're never going to make them robotic. If you want a robotic system, go back to the BCS computers. And, you know, they want transparency, obviously, with the way they select teams. They want to know what every metric they're looking at, why they picked this team over that team, why this team was ranked where they were, why is our team not seated a little bit higher or lower or whatever. And, you know, they went through all the metrics with them and showed them what they look at and how they base their decisions. But, I mean, listen, they could have stayed in there for 7 weeks because, I mean, you're just going to keep going over and over again in circles. And in the end, this is the system you guys chose. And you can introduce any new type of metrics you want in there, and it's still going to come down to human decisions.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can give them whatever the metric is and say, these are the metrics we use, but how a human interprets that data and then digests it and applies it to selecting teams. Well, that's there's no way we can give you hard evidence of like how each person did that.
Exactly. And, you know, coaches are they want to live in a black and white world. And when you're dealing with other humans and emotions and biases or even biases you don't even know you hold when you look at a team, and it's just the way it's going to be.
Greg Sankey talked about the depth of the SEC. It still says we're the best league, all these different things, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is the Big Ten has won 3 straight championships. And, you know, every year at SEC Media Days, you know, forever, Greg Sankey loves to get up there and talk about how many championships the conference has won in the past year, blah, blah, blah. So he obviously cares about championships. So this inside has – he could get up there and talk all he wants, but this has to be killing him that the Big Ten has won the last 3, right?
Oh, it certainly is bothering him. And, you know, listen, we could talk all day about is the SEC the better conference. I think it is top to bottom depth, but, you know, at the top of the Big Ten, those top 2 to 3 teams are better than the top 2 to 3 teams in the SEC. And that's just the way it has been the last 3 years. And you could argue once again, just here in the preseason, when you look at it, it's the same thing. You know, the Big Ten is going to be favored to win another national championship. In fact, I think I was looking, 3 of the top 5 teams in Vegas right now with odds to win the national championship are from the Big Ten. So, you know, I can understand his explanation about being the deepest league, but he also said in a minute, we just every day we're trying to figure out a way to get back and win that national championship. And, you know, I agree with his points. They're very fair and everything. But as you said, they're still trying to figure out a way to win the national championship once again, and it's eating at them.
Brandon Marcello joining us here on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line. You can follow him on Twitter at @bmarcello, the National College Football Reporter for CBS Sports. So from what you gathered down there, we know that Sankey keeps talking about 16, and we know that I guess theoretically would be where this conference would go, but coaches, and Mike Elko was very blunt about that, saying, listen, we all are about self-preservation, so we'll take the more the better. But amongst ADs, everyone else, if the option is either 12 or 24, do the people of the SEC, would they rather stay at 12 or would their support go towards 24?
I think they've been swinging more and more toward 24 among just the ADs and the coaches. And that goes to self-preservation from the ADs and coaches themselves. You know, if my football program's in the playoff more often, then I'm probably going to be in a spot where I'm going to keep my job, whether it's as a coach or an athletic director leading those athletic departments. Now, listen, I mean, it's as simple as this. I don't think anybody, if you put truth serum in everybody, every one of these commissioners across the country, and you told them, are you doing what's best for college football or are you doing what's best for your conference? And they'll all say, well, I'm doing what's best for my conference. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody's doing, you know. ESPN has made it very clear, and Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner, has said this, that they've said we do not want to expand beyond like a 16-team playoff ourselves. And what's the SEC's position been? No more than 16.
Yeah.
And the SEC obviously is in bed with ESPN and have been. They own all their rights. The ACC as well with ESPN. And meanwhile, you have the ACC saying, no, we want 24. They're doing this in spite of their partner, ESPN, not wanting that. And that's because the ACC sees the writing on the wall. If we do not expand the playoff, find ways to get more revenue, and then also get more representation in the playoff, 5-10 years from now, whenever they start discussing media rights, the ACC might be floating dead in the water.
Yeah.
Same with the Big 12. Now, the Big 10 SEC, they're on top. They don't want that. And so they see an opportunity here as far as the Big Ten. We need to expand because guess who their broadcast partner is? Fox, one of their big broadcast partners. And they've had this belief that if we go out the market and we make this playoff larger, we're going to get more money. But, you know, in the end, this is all about what each conference wants. That's why when you look at what's going on in Washington with the college bill, I think most people, if you step back and look at that bill, everybody's going to have issues with it. You always will be. But in the end, they'll all go, this is good for college athletics. We should go ahead and push forward with this because it's better than nothing. But the SEC and Big Ten are saying, well, yeah, this hurts us because we have the most to lose here. We don't want to be barred from making a super league because we're in position to potentially do that here soon. No one else is. We don't want to be pooling our media rights with other people because it's just going to help other people. It's not really going to help us. So, again, it's silo thinking, and we're going to have it that way forever unless, for some reason, someone steps in and blows the whole thing up and says, we're just going to have one commissioner of all of college athletics or college football or whatever, and let's get all together and do what's best for the sport of college football and for college athletics as a whole. And that's an impossibility now because it's the system is what it is, and you can't change it holistically without blowing it all up.
With that, you know, we had Kirby Smart talking about, oh, maybe we should just break away and make our own rules. The Big Ten, there was some discussion about, like I mean, get one conference, like the SEC doing it by themselves, that would make no sense whatsoever. Now, if the SEC and the Big Ten want to get together and do their breakaway, that certainly makes some sense. But like Kirby talking about, like, well, we'll just make our own rules. We'll play by those. Well, you're not going to do that while nobody else is playing by those rules.
There's certain things they can do as far as playing by their own rules, and that maybe involves working within the house settlement terms when it comes to rev share. You know, Josh Brooks, the Georgia Athletics Director, I spoke to him quite a bit about this one-on-one, and he said that they've got ideas, things they've discussed. So, for example, maybe we go over the revenue sharing cap, but the teams who do so have to pay a luxury tax to do so. Well, the SEC is more prepped to be able to do that than most other every conference, and they're willing to spend that money. And so if they can do that and find a way to work within the house settlement terms to do that, I think they'll do it. And then also, the CFC has been bogged down with going through these NIL deals, and the SEC could help that by creating their own kind of enforcement arm to go through things, and that's a possibility as well. But, you know, how close are we to that? You know, Josh Brooks told me we have to have something in place by January because that's when the transfer portal opens back up, and a lot of these teams are, as he said, everybody's in over their skis.
Yeah,
we've got more money committed for contracts that are going to become due that are probably going to be over the revenue share cap in a lot of these places. And that's their fault, obviously. And they need to find a way to remedy that. And their way to do that is, hey, let's just take things over here on this end and make some new rules.
You mentioned with the College Sports Commission, the Big 12 now has signed the participation agreement. All of the schools are in. Are any of these other conferences, are we close to that? Like the ACC going to be close to that, to doing that?
I think everybody wants to move toward that. And in the end, I hate to say this, but signing that thing doesn't really matter. It really doesn't. I mean, they're all still falling through with it. They're still submitting deals. At least most schools are. Not everybody's doing it. Some of them are circumventing the system. And surprise, surprise, guess what? It's always been like that.
Yeah.
We know that. There's certain places that want to skirt rules or hide certain things, and that'll continue whether you sign that participation agreement or not. I know everybody's been making a big deal about it, but in the end, in the big picture, if we want to tell the truth, signing a piece of paper doesn't matter.
There's the constant talk about the Super League stuff. Right now, is there, and I think Tony Petitti even talked about, like, we've not had these discussions at all. Is there any thought right now at all of the Big Ten and the SEC kind of breaking apart and doing a Super League type thing?
No. Honestly, everybody I've talked to on background, even off the record and everything, and I know folks, some will mislead you or whatever, but the folks that I trust, there's been no discussion about that. But that doesn't mean that won't come up in 4 years, because that's when it gets to, when it gets nut cutting time, as you say, when we get closer to the end of these media contracts and we have a better idea of what college athletics looks like, the rules in place, the legislation that's in place, then yeah, I think those discussions on some level will probably have to be had, because you have to put everything out on the table. Once things, nothing's going to be settled down, but things will be a little bit clearer then. Will we have legislation? Will there be any legislation by then? And then now we got to figure out what we're going to do with our media rights. I think at that point, that's when you have to look at this from a larger picture and discuss all options.
Brandon Marcello joining us here on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line. Danny White is the big supporter of the idea of making the athletes employees. Do you believe we will ever get to that point?
Well, you know, as Oklahoma's new athletics director, Roger Denny, told a few of us a couple weeks ago or last week, whenever that was, my dates always get mixed up this time of year, but he's got a background in law, and he said there's only one of two ways this goes: collective bargaining, or we get this legislation of some sort that somehow codifies some things where they can protect themselves. And more and more ADs in the SEC, which have been completely against the idea of collective bargaining, are coming around to that. And it's because they see the end of the road here. All the other options they've been trying, all the buttons they've pushed have been failing. Some of the buttons don't even work. Some of them are fake buttons. And if this legislation fails, I think you're going to hear quite a bit more people talking about collective bargaining.
How do you feel with this bill? And again, it certainly will change. Do you think they can get it to a point where it is passable?
I think we'll know in a month. And that's because the timeline sped up here. You know, Congress goes to recess in August, and then they'll come back and be in midterm mode. They'll be campaigning, and at that point, they're not going to get anything done in Congress. So they're going to go into the markup spot now after they had their hearing yesterday. They're going to take change suggestions. The SEC and Big Ten are certainly going to be involved in that here the next few days and couple of weeks. How fast can that be done? That's the question. Can that be done in 2 to 3 weeks to a point where then maybe you have the SEC and Big Ten say, hey, we're good with this. And then they push it to the Senate floor and go to a vote. Will the Senate pass it? I think the Senate will pass it, but then will the House pass it? That's the bigger question. And can you do all of this before August? That is a big, big ask, no matter who's in Congress, let alone the way it's set up now and with them all looking at midterms right around the corner.
Will the SEC and the Big Ten support any what's the biggest issue for them? Is it the pooling of media rights? Is it they can't expand the no super league type thing? What do you think is the biggest thing that they would say that's just a deal breaker?
I think it's very clear from, you know, even from the language from Congress, or excuse me, I should say the two senators who put this together, Ted Cruz and Maria Cantwell, that they're being targeted, not just with the pooling of media rights and barring from super leagues and all that stuff, but they're straight up being told, hey, you guys are too big for your britches. You gotta kind of share the wealth here. And they don't like being attacked anyway, but they don't like being attacked on an official capacity, literally in the language. I mean, I don't know if it was, I was talking to Maria Cantwell, the day this bill was released, and I don't know if she was misspeaking or if it was a attack on one of the conferences, but she was talking about the previous SCORE Act, which the Big Ten and SEC were on board with and helped, you know, with their lobbyists and everything. Because, listen, the SEC and Big Ten are spending about close to $1 million apiece each year on lobbyists in Washington.
Jeez.
And she called it the SEC SCORE Act. I don't know if she misspoke and was just in a hurry, but, you know, I think it's very clear that everybody other than the SEC and Big Ten have issues with the SEC and Big Ten.
But it's funny because a lot of people will tell you this act would be more Big 12 because it's the Cody Campbell.
Yeah. Listen, it's whenever because these conferences take sides and everything on themselves and self-preservation, and now they're hiring lobbyists to push their agenda across in Washington, which they've been doing for the better part of 5 years. Go look. You can go Google the numbers they've been spending. I mean, the SEC just this past quarter spent $200,000 on lobbyists in Washington. This is what happens. College athletics has become political, and now they're in the political arena. And I almost tweeted this yesterday after the hearing, but I just almost said, war is coming. Political wars are coming to college athletics, and buckle up, get ready.
It's the way of our world right now, the way of our country right now. You have to have political wars. One other thing that kind of I'm more on the field, I guess, you talked about this, the Brett Yormark talked about the Big 12 considering going to 10 conference games. What's the thought process there? Why would they want to go to 10?
Self-preservation. What's best for the Big 12? And, that's not necessarily a bad thing because, listen, their strength of schedule has been attacked over and over again in the last several years. And when you have a team like BYU that has, you know, one could argue should have been in the playoff, but yet they didn't get a lot of discussion about that. It was more or less like, should this three-loss team in the SEC get in? And they did. You know, I can understand that. So that's why they're wanting to increase their own conference schedule difficulty and then maybe continue to play, you know, other Power 5 opponents. So then you have 11 games at the very least of Power 5 conference opponents. That would help their strength of schedule.
Yeah.
Would it close the gap? It would shrink it. It wouldn't close the gap, but it would certainly help them.
Along that line, do you think the Big Ten ever go to adding the requirement of a Power Four opponent outside of conference play?
Only until they'd have to, with strength of schedule. It's as simple as that. It's not. I mean, I just don't see that happening anytime soon, based off of just their success in the postseason so far.
Makes sense. Yeah. You certainly don't. Things are going well for them right now. They do not need to change anything.
Why change anything? Everything's going great for them.
He is Brandon Marcello. Again, CBS Sports, national college football writer on Twitter at BMarcello. Brandon, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate it. Talk to you down the road.
Hey, anytime. Thanks.
Brandon Marcello. He's great, man. He knows his stuff. That's for sure. But he said exactly what I said when that bill came out. The SEC and Big Ten, you can't target them. Like, you can't blatantly, and again, they without using SEC and Big Ten, they use the whole, if you make $1 billion, which everybody knows which two conferences that is. You can't target those two conferences and expect them to just go, okay, that's fine, we understand.
Right, you target them out subliminally and then expecting them to join in and help you in the mission on this.
Nobody, regardless of what it is, even if, and anything in life, if you feel targeted by something, you are going to, you're going to fight back.
Yeah, it's going to be resistance.
Even if it makes complete sense, you're like, why are they targeting me? Wait a second, why are you picking on me?
All right.
Why am I singled out amongst all of these people? You know, if you're the kid in class that's talking or whatever, like if every kid in class is talking and the teacher yells at you,
one singled out.
Wait, why me? Yeah. Like everybody's doing this. Why are you trying to set rules for me?
Right.
So it's again, they've got to figure out a better way. And I don't know. I will still stick by my original thing that they will never get this passed, but we shall see. Folks, if you got a move coming up into a new home, new office, wherever you're moving, whenever you're moving, talk to the folks from Black Tie Moving. They're the ones to take care of it for you. Take all the stress and worry out of the moving process by calling the professionals, the experts at Black Tie. 901-316-6196 or go to blacktiemoving.com/Memphis to talk to the professionals, the experts. They work with you to come up with a plan for your move, fitting your needs, number one, fitting your budget, number two, and they will give you a no-obligation quote up front so you know exactly what it's going to cost. So that's the folks at Black Tie Moving. Again, you don't want to try and do it yourself. Don't ask your lazy friends. They don't care about your stuff. They don't care if they break anything, whatever. The professionals at Black Tie will take good care of your belongings and good care of you during the entire process. So give them a call or go to the website and talk to the professionals at Black Tie Moving. Back to wrap up today's program right after this, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 mornings.
Good morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, 9:51 the time. Mentioned earlier in the show that Russell Wilson made it official. He is retiring from the NFL and he will be going to CBS Sports as an analyst. Jay, Russell Wilson, Hall of Famer?
I don't think he gets in. Really, really good player for a good stretch. Super Bowl winner. Probably could have been a two-time Super Bowl winner. He just handed the ball off. But I don't think he gets in there, though. And this would without me looking at his numbers or just going over the overview of his resume.
Like he's behind like Eli Manning in both yards, touchdowns. Now he did make a lot of Pro Bowls. I don't know how much that matters anymore.
Right. What about his all pros?
That's what I'm trying to. He was second team in 2019, I believe. Yeah. I think Eli will definitely get in at some point. So once Eli gets in, I mean, obviously, I mean, he's got more. Eli has more yards, more touchdowns. He has the two Super Bowls to Russell Wilson's one. I mean, Russell Wilson had a really good. Obviously, Russell Wilson has the rushing, got a little more rushing numbers and things like that. He's a different type of quarterback as far as that is concerned. But I don't know.
He may be one that gets in further down the road, but it won't be like within the first 5 years of eligibility or a thing like that, I don't think.
He was a Walter Payton Man of the Year, but Eli was that won that as well. 10 Pro Bowls. But again, I don't know what that, especially nowadays, like you make the Pro Bowl like because 14 guys drop out.
And right, and everybody's going to play flag football and land on crash pads.
I don't know. That's it's an interesting case. I could see, he certainly won't. It'll be one. He'll have to wait. He'll have to wait a few times. And he'll have to be eligible at least a few times before he gets that opportunity. But the Memorial Tournament is underway at this is Jack Nicklaus's tournament each and every year up in Ohio. JT Poston is your early leader. He is 3 under par through 10. Jordan Spieth, Rio Hitsutsuni, who seems to be up towards the top of the leaderboard every week, Adam Scott, Keegan Bradley, JJ Spawn, and Tommy Fleetwood all at 2 under par right now at the Memorial up at Muirfield Village in Ohio. We got a text here from Raider Corey. It says, I'm not John Varlas, but I do have a bone to pick with Mr. Nick Saban. I should be surprised, but I'm not. And I will suffice to say simply by saying, you of all people should not be on Capitol Hill voicing concerns. You and your school profited immensely, but when the playing field became leveled and you could no longer dominate, you exited. It is funny listening to Nick Saban talk about the money and all the issues and all that when he literally had a contract that guaranteed to make him the highest paid coach in America. You're worried about the money the schools have and all this stuff, but literally, no matter what any other coach signed, your contract automatically made you the highest paid coach in America.
I got mine.
It's like, it is the ultimate getting yours. Hell with everybody else. I've got to get mine. That is going to do it for us here on today's program. Thanks to Chip Williams. Thanks to Kerry Miller. Thanks to Brandon Marcello, all for joining us on the program today. Coming up tomorrow, John Varlas will be here, and I'm sure he will have a bone to pick on tomorrow's show. We'll also have Joe DeLeon, Ed DeRosa going to join us to talk a little Belmont as well, as Greg Gaston will actually make his return to the program.
After 81 days.
That is the rumors have it that he is back after his trip to outer space. I'm not sure where he went. May have been outer space, may have been, I don't know. But he is expected to make his triumphant return here on the program tomorrow. Up next, it is Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. For Jay, I'm Eli. Enjoy what is going to be another beautiful day out there. Today and tomorrow both look like they're going to be spectacular. And then it looks like we might get some rain for the weekend. But today, lots of sun. Get out, enjoy it, and have a lot of fun. Enjoy your Thursday. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning for the Friday edition of Sports 56 Mornings, bright and early at 7 a.m. right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Be sure to download our Hub 901 app for instant access to Sports 56 and all the Flynn Broadcasting stations from anywhere. Go to the App Store and get the Hub 901.